After your service to the National Council of Jewish Women.
In 1975 and 1976, I was the certified professional parliamentarian. At their nominating committee meetings held in New York City at one of the hotels, which lasted for 2 days and evenings, and representatives were brought here from every region of the United States to serve on the nominating committee. I told them at the time that I felt that this was one of the most democratic organizations in the country. Naming its nominating committee in such a form and spending so much time to search for the coming officers of the new administration.
Thank you very much. Now going backwards again, you mentioned that you were the executive vice president of Hadassah at the time that Irma Lindheim left the country for a while, and thus you served as acting president of Hadassah for a while.
Well, then you can say in about 1925 or 26.
Yeah. Now, in 1929, you were in Palestine?
1929, just after arriving in New York, I was named as a delegate to the World Zionist Organization. Mm-hmm. In Basel, Switzerland.
Yeah.
And at the last moment.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The pencil there.
Yeah.
And at the last moment, my husband and children decided to join me. Mm-hmm. The children were then 8 and 14 years old. And we left for Zurich, Switzerland.
Yes.
For 13 days, the conference lasted. And during that time, my husband and children visited the country and the Alps and pleaded with me to come and see some of the scenes. Mm-hmm. But of course, I could not leave the convention. And so I saw nothing of those parts in those days. However, we did leave for Venice and Egypt, and finally landed in Palestine in 1929 in August, and 1 week later the riots broke out.
Where were you during the riots?
In Jerusalem.
Did you experience
in one of their small hotels, for they didn't have hotels like they have now.
How did you experience the riots?
There were five of us up one night in the hotel. My husband, Rabbi Goldman of Providence, Rhode Island, Francis Lesser, the national president of Junior Hadassah, Dr. and Mrs. Cohen of New Orleans. We were told the Arabs were going to attack Jerusalem. No one had arms of any kind. People were fleeing from the surrounding communities to our hotel. The great majority were in bed. We stayed up the entire night waiting, although we had no help of any kind in arms. I remember going in to look at my two children. It was a hot night. I covered them up because I was frightened that if the Arabs came, I did not want them to think anyone was sleeping there. 5 o'clock in the morning, we got word from the Haganah, the group that were protecting the Jews, while the British were siding with the Arabs. And they said they had driven the Arabs back from Jerusalem. And then we went to bed. There were so many killed, Jews killed. We visited Hebron one day before the attacks. There were a great many American Jewish students studying at the Talmud Torah there.
My girlfriend's grandmother was killed in Hebron in 1929. Yeah.
A tremendous number of these American Jews plus Palestinian Jews were killed. Two or three who were saved came to our hotel to stay there that night or for the rest of the period. On Friday night, it was unbelievable. These who had lost their brothers were singing Samiras. And one wondered how they had the strength to survive. All through our period there, the attacks went on. In Hebron, not only were the Jewish students killed, but some of the closest friends of the Arabs, who for many years studied together with the leadership in Hebrew and Arabic, and they killed their friends here. At a trial, a little 5-year-old youngster turned to one of these leaders and said, "Why did you kill my father?" We left after several weeks. Peace had been restored.
How much of Palestine did you get to see?
Fortunately, while we were expected in Jerusalem and a committee were waiting to welcome us, a friend from Connecticut was going directly to Tel Aviv. So we thought we would stay on and go directly to Tel Aviv, which gave us the opportunity of spending 1 week visiting Haifa, Safed, and all the country around before we got to Jerusalem. And just as we got to Jerusalem, the attacks started.
Did you visit any of the early kibbutzim?
Beg pardon?
Did you visit any of the early kibbutzim?
Any of the early?
Kibbutzim. Kibbutz.
I don't think the kibbutzim were in full force at that time. But Francis Lesser, the national president of Junior Hadassah, was in Jerusalem with me at the time. And we were terribly concerned about Meir Shve, the institution of young children that Junior Hadassah supported.
Yes.
So we ran around to the British key people, to the Arab key people, pleading for help to be sent to Meir Shve. Their answer was to have them get out.
Huh.
And we said they would be killed on the way. Finally, we were told to get in touch with the High Commissioner of Haifa. So we sent a telegram to the High Commissioner of Haifa, and we stated, on behalf of 100,000 American women, we did not use the word Jewish, we urge who support the institution of children, Meir Shve. We urge you to send protection to this institution.
Mm-hmm.
Within a few hours, four soldiers were sent to Meir Shvei and remained there until the attacks were completely over.
I am going to turn the clock backward for a minute because I suddenly remembered that in the Tri-State Pincus, you are pointed out as the figure which prevented the complete breakdown of the conference, I think, in 1921, and you were the one that brought the opposing figures together.
Where did you see that?
In the Tri-State Pincus.
Where?
Tri-State Pincus that Mr. Nathan Savage put together about the Zionist movement in Pittsburgh. And there's an article there by Rose Halpern in which she says that were it not for Mrs. A.H. Vixman of Pittsburgh, the whole convention would have fallen apart. And I was wondering if you would say a few words about your role. I know we're turning backwards a little bit, but it's so important about what happened there. I think it was 1921.
It was Jacob de Haas.
Yes.
A key English man who had been their secretary of the English Federation and later the secretary of the Federation of American Zionists, mm-hmm. and resigned at the later, who then wrote me that if a convention had not been in Pittsburgh, Hadassah would have been in two parts. I didn't want to go into that, but I see you have that there.
Well,
I'll tell you. I'll tell you what happened. In 1921, I believe.
Yes.
There was a convention of the Zionist Organization of America, or Federation. I don't remember what it was called then, in Cleveland, Ohio. The problem was the Karen Hayesod Fund, which the American leaders claimed was being used for all kinds of funds in Palestine when it had been definitely designated for a specific fund. And men like Justice Brandeis and Abba Hillel Silver and Stephen Wise and others of that leadership were complaining and disagreeing with this action. Previous to the convention, there had been a tremendous amount of propaganda in the United States in favor of the leadership of the World Zionist Organization. Louis Lipsky, then president of the Zionist Organization, and others conducted a propaganda here in favor of Dr. Weizmann and his committee and opposed to the American leadership. And this propaganda had actually severed the whole United States Zionist group. At the Cleveland Convention, when the majority sustained Dr. Weizmann and his committee, Dr. Justice Brandeis, Rabbi Silver, Dr. Wise, and others resigned from the organization. I remember sitting at a cafeteria after that convention, having a cup of coffee, tears streaming down my cheeks, when a stranger approached me and said, "What happened? I hear something terrible has happened in this organization." So I explained it to him. He said, "We are at fault for not having taken the proper interest in this movement." The schism spread to the United States and affected the Hadassah organization. And the then professional executive director, Mrs. Danziger, stood with Mr. Lipsky on this issue. Therefore, letters went out to the whole membership of Hadassah, practically, taking a stand on this issue, so that the National Board of Hadassah came to the conclusion that there was no hope for a united Hadassah, and they began seeking for an alternate project, and had written to Henrietta Zold. And Henrietta Zold had suggested that they take the project of the children of Palestine. When the National Board arrived in Pittsburgh, we had a dinner arranged for them at Louis Avner's home. He was a prominent attorney in Pittsburgh and a leader of the Zionist movement. They described the situation, and I took the stand it did not need to be. We could stand as one and hold together. And they talked and talked. And finally they agreed, since Mr. Avner agreed with me, that this is what would take place. And they would follow my leadership in this direction, because the whole Western Pennsylvania delegation would follow me in whatever I did. That Saturday afternoon, previous to the convention, we held a big tea at one of the hotels. We went also to the opposite side and told them to be among the speakers at the tea. They looked at us in surprise and said, "What shall we say?" We said, "Talk about the beauty of Hadassah and how wonderful the organization is." And when that tea was over, we were in tears because the spirit was so beautiful. The next day on Sunday, the convention was to open. My youngest daughter, Leona, was 4 months old. I was nursing her. I get a call from Alice Seligsberg. Yes. One of the leaders of the National Board, who kept me on the phone for a solid hour, saying, after we got away, we thought of it again, and we decided that we couldn't go along that way. We had to follow our own program of action, and they wanted me to go along with them. I told them I would not. We argued for a solid hour, in which I stated that I was quite sure we could remain together if we assumed the attitude that I had spoken of. I told Miss Seligsberg that if it had to break, she could rest assured that our entire group would go with her side. But that we would not take the stand in the beginning. When the convention opened, there were times when I was on the floor. There were times when I was presiding. They always said they never knew which was the best place for me to be in. I took cabs to get home to nurse my child, and cabs to get back. We followed my way of treating it. There were many moments when we thought it was going to break. Alice Seligsberg did not want to give a vote of confidence to Chaim Weizmann. Somehow or other, we worked it out. And when the convention was over, we were as one.
But did you finally give the vote of confidence to Chaim Weizmann?
She didn't vote at all.
Oh, she abstained.
I think she abstained.
But Hadassah stood behind
him. I think
him.
She abstained. But we...
But Hadassah remained uniform.
Remained as one group, with the same project that it had.
But nonpartisan.
And nobody resigned. Remained as one.
You personally, where were your sympathies personally, with the Brandeis Group or with the Weitzman-Lipsky Group?
Brandeis Group.
You were sympathetic with the Brandeis Group.
I was with the Brandeis Group. Because, you see, ethically, we had to think in terms of a fund that had been projected along certain lines and ought not to be used for other sources.
Was the problem that they were using the money for arms?
No, just for other projects.
I see.
I really don't know about that, but I don't think it was, I think it was other projects. Henrietta Zold wrote me a letter asking me how did it happen, because she had already been reconciled to the break. My husband wrote a poem that was published in the Jewish Criterion, which he said...
Oh, I have to look it up. In 1921?
I think it was. I'm not sure.
Okay.
In which he said, it was all a misunderstanding. Of course, it was more than that.
What about your relationship with Yale Borken? He was a strong Weitzman man, wasn't he?
I don't know. We didn't...
He
might have been, but then...
Oh, you weren't working for him anymore.
It didn't matter anyhow, because...
How long did you work for Borken?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
But at this time, it didn't matter.
I don't
think
I was even paid.
I see.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it was then that Jacob DeHaas wrote me the note saying that if this convention had been held in any other city but Pittsburgh, Hadassah would have been in two parts.
Did you write to Henrietta Zold?
What?
Did you write to Henrietta Zold?
Well, when she asked me what happened, I had to give her an explanation.
In other words, your letter to Henrietta Zold is in the Zold archives in Jerusalem.
Yes.
Your letter.
Oh.
Because Henrietta Zold's secretary.
Oh, I know her.
Mrs. Ehrlich.
I knew her. What was her name?
I know the last one.
Ehrlich.
I met her in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
I took a picture of her.
When were you there?
Last year.
Oh, you met her in Jerusalem?
Emma Ehrlich. She is now editing the papers to put them out as a book. And I told her, I told her that I thought that there might be some interesting things from Pittsburgh that I could find for her. But I couldn't find anything, but now you tell me, so I'll write to her. You probably have Rachel Vixman's letter there describing the whole situation.
Yes, because Ms. Zold had gotten the explanation from all the others, the National Board.
But
she asked me, how did it happen, because she couldn't believe it.
I'm going to jump to another topic now, and I hope you'll forgive me, because this is one of the professional areas that you mention in your CV, and that is parliamentarian. How did you become a parliamentarian? How did you get into that?
When I used Mrs. Harry Harvey Thomas, one of the best known parliamentarians of the country, who was busy not only in the United States, but had invitations from Europe and elsewhere. And I had her serve at a certain convention
as an advisor?
As the parliamentarian for the group. It was a very, very serious convention in which we had to oppose an outstanding leader of the country. And I had to play quite an important part at that convention.
This
I won't mention the name.
This was not a Jewish organization?
What?
Was this a Jewish organization?
Yes, but I won't state the name.
Okay.
When the convention was over, Well, it's the most beautiful letter I own. I don't know. It isn't there. I didn't put it in there. In which he told me I was one of the one of the greatest leaders that she had ever met in watching an organization convene. And shortly after that, she asked me to take over a class of 80.
This is in New York already.
I was in New York, yeah. Class of 80 presidents of the PTA, Parent Teachers Association. Since she had another commitment, I asked her if I could do it. She said, I've seen you in worse trials. And so my first commitment was parliamentarian for 80 presidents in a library in Queens. After that, she turned over a great many duplications to me.
Did you get paid for this work?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope so.
That was professional.
Well, how did you...
And then she also advised me to become a member of the American Institute of Parliamentarians. Mm-hmm. So that I was enlisted.
Did you have to pass a test?
No, because they're not very strict. However, later on, when I was in Canada, I wrote a correspondence course in parliamentary law for the membership of Canada Hadassah Wheatso. And I sent the index to the American Institute, at which they gave me the highest title, Certified Professional Parliamentarian. And later years had me on their advisory council for many years.
When were you invited to do the preface to the new edition of Robert's Rules of Order?
In...
Which I own, and I forgot to bring it for
you. You have it. Wait a minute.
I forgot to bring it for your autograph.
You don't need it. It's...
I have it. I bought it special.
Can you reach that book in there? I just have one copy left.
But I have it.
Over there. I think it's 1969. No, underneath. That's it.
Here it is. I think
it's
1969. I bought it at home special, and I had it on my mind to bring it to your autograph. What it says on the cover, I forgot.
It was originally 75 cents, and it went to $1.50.
And I wanted your autograph, and I forgot to bring it for your autograph. Did you get any money out of this? Were you paid to do this?
Yes,
hope you were.
Yes.
Did they invite you because of your fame as a parliamentarian?
You want the story?
Yeah, it's interesting.
I think it's 1969. Wait a minute. 1967. I was invited by the Pyramid Publications, who told me that a churchman had found a Garden commentary copyright. Who had found it couldn't be a 1967. Yeah, copyright 1967. No, that's when it was printed. They found an early edition of the Robert's Rules of Order and wanted this firm, who dealt in paperbacks, to publish 1,000 copies for them.
Mm-hmm.
They decided they couldn't do that until they found a parliamentarian to tell them whether the book was worth republishing.
I see. Okay.
And so they had a hard time trying to find a parliamentarian, because we don't we don't advertise.
Oh, I see.
And finally, someone called the New York City Federation of Women's Clubs and asked if they knew of a parliamentarian. And they said, of course, Rachel Vixman, she's our parliamentarian.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they gave me this early copy and asked me to look through it and to tell them if it was worth republishing. Because since then, Roberts had published Roberts Rules of Order Revised. I studied it carefully and saw there were very few changes. So I said, if you can publish this in paperback for 75 cents, you will be rendering a real service to the community, because otherwise they don't spend $4 or $5 for Roberts Rules of Order. But I said to them, is it ethical?
Oh.
Have you the right to do that?
Uh-huh.
They said the copyright has expired. I asked this question so often that they got very angry, and they said, our lawyers have told us that we have the right to do this, and we copyright $25 books